And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, hello there. Good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn, Open Talk to begin the program today. We'll be talking with a few guests later on. We're going to be chatting about the Real Warriors campaign. That's something new for me. It's a nationwide campaign that deals with the psychological problems that many of our military veterans are experiencing. So we'll talk with the active military and with a physician about that a little bit later. Also, World Hearing Day is coming up next week. We'll talk about that with an audiologist. And finally, we're scheduled to chat today with Samuel Shim, who has great concerns about the amount of time that physicians have to spend on computer screens nowadays. So all of that to come later on the program. But Open Talk to begin with. Phone number 283-2525, 283-2525. So which is worse? If it just stays cold all winter, which it usually does, or if it gets warm, such as we've had for much of February. You know, a couple of days ago we had 55 degrees. And then we had a couple of days of 50 degrees. Now all of a sudden it's just brutal out there today. Is that worse? It might be better just to stay cold until finally when it warms up it stays warm. Huh? I don't know. But it is brutal out there today. Anybody that's been outside could attest to that. I was just checking the wind chill, and even now, here we are in the noon hour, and the wind chill is 11 above. The temperature outside is, what, 23, 24? Wind is still whistling, and that wind is really brutal today. Well, it's still February, right? Yeah. Less than a month to go until the first day of spring. We'll look forward to that coming up along about the third week of March. Open Talk to begin with at 283-2525. You know, a week ago, we were talking about the disappearance of little Cherry Mahan, a disappearance that remains unsolved. It was 35 years. We had a 35th anniversary of her disappearance last weekend. And it was in the news. It even made the national news. It was all over the Pittsburgh TV news, too. We were talking about it here. And it's an incredibly sad story for her family and for her friends, many of whom gathered, by the way, this past weekend to talk about the unsolved disappearance of Cherry Mahan. That is not the only unsolved disappearance of a young girl, though, here in our area. There's another. Michelle Reidenbach of the Zelianople area. 16 years old when she disappeared. That was in October of 1981. 91, 01, 11. That's almost 40 years ago now. Do you know this story? Yeah, it's probably not as well known, or at least not as well remembered as the Cherry Mahan story. Cherry Mahan, after all, was just 8 years old. Michelle Reidenbach was 16, still in school. She was a senior at Seneca Valley. And after school on the day she disappeared, October 6th, 1981, after school she had talked with a friend of hers on the school bus, Beth Staub. Michelle Reidenbach had helped Beth prepare for yearbook photographs, loaned her a couple of pieces of jewelry, fixed her hair. They had just gotten their senior pictures taken for the Seneca Valley yearbook. They got off the bus together. Michelle went to her after-school job at Melden's Appliance Store in downtown Zelianople. And that was it. She was never seen again. Wow. Wow. She was at Melden's Appliance Store. She told her boss she was going to run over to a nearby pharmacy to get some cold medicine. She wasn't feeling well. She left on foot, left her backpack behind. A clerk at the pharmacy confirmed that Michelle did come in and purchased the medicine and left the store. And that was it. Never returned to work. Never seen since. 16 years old. That's another sad story. Incredible that we have two of those stories here in Butler County. Not all that far apart. Back in the 1980s. And both of those people are still missing. Jerry Mahan and Michelle Reidenbach. And no one has any idea what happened to them. Wow. Well, I just thought I'd mention that because the story of Michelle Reidenbach is not as well known and certainly not as well remembered, tragically, as the story of Jerry Mahan. Michelle Reidenbach disappeared in October. Jerry Mahan, of course, was in late February. Sad to remember, huh? 283-2525 is our number. Open talk on this segment of the It's Your Turn program today. 283-2525. When does the census start? I keep seeing ads on TV. They're still asking for people to be census workers. Let me see here. Census timeline. Oh, yeah, they started counting in remote villages in Alaska. I remember doing a story on that several weeks ago because of weather conditions. Some of those rural villages they can only get to and everything is frozen solid. But for the vast majority of households, you should begin receiving your official Census Bureau mail with detailed information on how to respond to the census sometime between March 12th and March 20th. So that would be, the third week of March. You should get your stuff in the mail. And this year, this census, you can respond in three different ways. You can do it by mail, which is the only way that I ever remember doing it in past census. But this year you'll be able to do it by mail, by phone, or you can respond online, which I'm sure a lot of people will do. And then during the month of the last day of March, last couple of days of March, the Census Bureau will count people who are experiencing homelessness over that period. They'll be going to shelters and stuff. In April, census takers will begin visiting college students who live on campus and also people who live in senior centers to count them. And then in May, June, and July, census takers will be visiting homes that have not responded to the mail that you'll be getting in just a few weeks. So that's the timeline. I wonder, was it the last census? It would have been 2010. They come every 10 years. Was it the last census where they had the short form and the long form? Or was that back in 2000? I can't remember now. It was very controversial. If you got a short form, there was nothing to it. Bada-bing, bada-bing, you filled it out, sent it in, and that was that. But the long form was was very long. And it asked a whole bunch of really personal questions. Far more than just how many people live in your house. And a lot of people were upset by that. And it was random whether you got a long form or not. And supposedly, it was a crime if you didn't send in the long form. But I can't remember whether that was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And I haven't seen anything this year about whether or not there's going to be a short form or a long form. Is it just me, or does it seem like the federal government has made this a lot more complicated than it has to be? I'm not saying that it's easy, but, I mean, just respond. How many people live in your household, and that's it? You know, that's the count. It just seems like they make it so complicated and so complex. Maybe it's just me. 283-2525, our number. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Nice to talk to you. I'm a little chilly around the edges, to be honest with you, but other than that...
A lot chilly around the edges. This is Rambo, Dave.
Hey, what can we do for you here today?
Oh, about a month ago when you were talking about Doreen Miller, do you remember the conversation with his son?
Who was it again that I was talking to?
Doreen Miller.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay, right.
From Pearl Harbor?
Yes, mm-hmm. And?
In the movie Tora, 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 they do have a scene where he is shown helping the captain get off the ship, then running back to the gun and loading the gun and firing at the planes.
Yeah, I remember that story when we were talking about Pearl Harbor. Yeah, and they named a ship after him, right? That's why his name was in the news a few weeks
ago.
Yeah,
they're building a new ship. They're naming after him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also in the movie Pearl Harbor, there's a scene in that movie too, portraying him.
Now, is this there have been a bunch of movies about Pearl Harbor. Is this the most recent one? Was just a few years ago?
The most recent one, but the Tora, Tora, Tora movie, I believe that was made in the late 50s.
It wasn't in the 50s. I'm going to guess 60s or even 70s. But that was an unusual movie because it was told from both the American point of view and the Japanese point of view.
There's a part in that movie where they show him, they portray him firing the gun and everything, help him get the captain off the ship and all that, yes.
I've watched Tora, Tora, Tora. I did not see the most recent one from, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 years ago. I forget when it was. I did not see that one.
The Pearl Harbor movie?
Yeah. Have you ever been to Pearl Harbor?
No, sir. My uncle was in the... He was on board of one of the ships there, and he wanted me to go, but he passed away before we could make it there.
I have never been there either, although I did have the great honor of talking with a butler man, he's now deceased, who was at Pearl when the Japanese attack took place.
Yes, I heard that. I heard that interview.
Yeah, it was the late Ray Staley. Great guy.
Okay, Dave, you stay warm. You're the Johnny Carson of the airwaves, brother.
Thank you, my friend. Thanks. So long. A little tough to stay warm today when you're outside. You got to bundle up. That wind is ferocious. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Open talk. On this segment of It's Your Turn today, 283-2525. Hey, aren't the new streetlights in downtown Butler terrific? Have you seen those? I think they're just about finished putting them up. They were a little behind schedule because of it wasn't the fault of the contractor. It's local company that's putting them up. Some of the parts did not arrive in a timely manner. And then, of course, you know, you got weather to deal with. I still can't believe they were able to get them up as quickly as they did. They are really nice. First of all, they're black instead of the aluminum color. And the ones that they took down, the old streetlight poles, were really getting tacky. I guess they're getting dangerous, too. Worries about them coming down. And the new ones are very nice. They have, first of all, they're LED, so they're much brighter. There is a light high up that lights the street, just like the old ones. And then about two-thirds of the way down the pole, there's a light over the sidewalk, you know, facing in the opposite direction, 180 degrees from the overhead light. And those are nice. And then the real bonus, and I just discovered these earlier this week. Actually, well, I was driving to work one morning in the dark, of course. And the remains of the sidewalk lights that they had in the city of Butler up until about 5 years ago, the ones that started to fall over and they had to remove them all, the bases of those lights were still there. And they've rigged them. I guess the wiring was still in there. And they've rigged them, and they have these little, the best way to describe it is like night lights. And it just gives you a little bit more light for the sidewalk and the edge of the sidewalk. And it really looks neat. I mean, I expected these new lights to be pretty nice, but they exceed my expectations. They really are very nice. And, of course, they're LED. And also, there's no overhead wiring like the old ones. All the wiring is underground. So I don't think they're quite finished yet because they still have a lot of those orange cones up along Main Street. But the project is at least nearing an end. And it really, really is nice. Really. Well, we must get ready for our first guest who's going to be joining us talking about the Real Warriors campaign. Are you familiar with this? No, it's new to me. But it has to deal with helping veterans, military personnel who are experiencing psychological problems. And this is quite common, and there's, you know, of course, there's always some stigma attached to that. We will have a couple of guests that we'll be chatting with. One is a physician, Dr. Nick Polizzi, and the other is an executive officer for the 120th Airlift Wing, Captain Cassandra Ross. So they'll both be joining us by telephone. Coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we'll chat with them right after these words.
This time of year, it's fish fry time at Michael's Restaurant. You can't beat the great beer-battered fish with fries. You start looking forward to it the moment Lent arrives. Start your family tradition of enjoying fish fry dinners at Michael's Restaurant. That's Michael's Restaurant, with great homemade food all year long.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
On this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. Folks, did you make New Year's resolutions? Are you struggling to keep up with them here now that we're a couple of months or so into the new year? Well, many service members, veterans, and family members of service personnel are evaluating the progress of their New Year's resolutions. And in that spirit, the Real Warriors campaign is encouraging members of the military to follow through with care for psychological health concerns. We're going to talk about that today. Two guests visit with us. Dr. Nick Polizzi is Government Action Officer for the Real Warriors Campaign, and Captain Cassandra Ross, Executive Officer for the 120th Airlift Wing in Montana, also with us. First of all, let me start with you, Dr. Polizzi. What is the Real Warriors campaign? Can you give us that in a nutshell, sir?
Absolutely. The Real Warriors campaign is the Defense Department's official anti-mental health stigma campaign. The public awareness campaign to decrease mental health or the stigma surrounding mental health care, and then increase education about mental health issues, and then also open doors for access to mental health for real warriors such as airmen, National Guard, reserves, Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, etc., but then also for their loved ones or friends and in the workplace.
Captain Cassandra Ross is a 13-year veteran. As I mentioned a moment or so ago, she's the executive officer for the 120th Airlift Wing in the Montana Air National Guard. And Captain Ross, you've had some positive results, have you not, in seeking care and working through treatment?
I have. I've had positive results, but I don't want to take away from the fact that it took a lot of work, it took a lot of support, and it was a real struggle to find the right care for me. And I want people to know that if they're reaching out and they are seeking help, that please don't compare your story to others. Don't put that judgment on yourself. It might take more than one counselor. It took 5 counselors for me to find one that fit for me. And it's really difficult when you're already struggling to want to go find another counselor. But that might be what it takes for you to get the tools and the resources you need to fight your own personal battle with this.
Captain Ross, do you
feel, you're not alone.
Captain Ross, do you feel free to talk a little bit about your personal story and your psychological health concerns?
Yeah, so I joined the Guard 13 years ago, and right out of the gate, things were going pretty well. I enjoyed my career, got married, had a couple kids. They're incredible. And then I went to flight school, and throughout some of the training, it brought up a lot of the trauma that I suffered as a youth that I thought I was past that. I thought, no, I got this. I'm good. I'm just going to move past it. And then it started coming up in ways that I really didn't have any control over. I got to where I really couldn't focus at work. I was agitated all the time. I didn't want to go home. I couldn't sleep. I was having nightmares, so I was exhausted. And I realized one day when I was stepping to the airplane as a navigator that I couldn't focus and I couldn't be present, and I was putting other people's lives at risk, so I needed to say something. Mm. So I reached out to my DPH, the Director of Psychological Health on base, and she connected me with care. And originally we tried an intensive outpatient that did not work for me. It did not suit me at all. So we moved on to another counselor. And like I said, it took 5 of them, but ultimately I found one that I was able to connect with, and we found different methods of treatment that worked for me. And now I realize that psychological health, it's not a one-stop shop. It's not one and done. I was really hard on myself. I really wanted to be, you know, one treatment session and I'm better. And that's not the reality. It took time. It took using different tools and trying different things. And now it's just like working out or your physical health. You have to work to maintain it. You have to find what works for your body and your mind. And now I get it. Now life is going really smooth, and I have the tools that I need that when things come up, I know how to handle them, and I know that I can reach out. And in reaching out, I told my command, I told the wing, I've told lots of people my story, and I've been met with nothing but support and love from my fellow airmen and the military community as a whole. The more we tell our stories, the more people are going to realize that it's okay to struggle with something, and it can be simple day-to-day stuff. Go get help when it's still small before it becomes so big that it's overwhelming.
Let me go back to Dr. Nick Polizzi. Doctor, you've got more than 10 years experience, more than 10 years of clinical experience in the military community. Can you tell our listeners about some of the signs and symptoms that might present with veterans with psychological health concerns?
Absolutely, and I'll start with a really broad one, which may just sound too simple, but it's a great place to start, which is if someone's just not either feeling themselves or feeling like themselves or acting like themselves. You know, if you're if it's yourself and you kind of get that, I call it like that prickly feeling inside, and you know, then something's not quite right, and you're on day five, day six, day seven of this. Or if you've got somebody, maybe it's a husband or a wife or a coworker or a child, and they're not acting like themselves, and something's not quite right, and even if you can't put your finger on it, that in and of itself is a sign. Something's unusual, and that in and of itself could be the moment when you say, hey, listen, I don't know what it is, but you're not quite acting like yourself. Is everything okay? And that may be good enough to get the discussion going, and then we'd say, all right, let's go to realwarriors.net and see what we can learn more about these topics, be it anger, be it depression, be it having trouble sleeping, for example. You know, that would sort of be the one-stop shop to dip your toe in the water. Is what I'd say. And then there are other symptoms too. You know, maybe somebody is sleeping too much or sleeping too little, engaging in alcohol use more than they usually would or other substances. Maybe their mood is suddenly down when it's usually pretty up. Maybe their behavior's changed. They're withdrawing. For example, like you have a group you go bowling with every Tuesday and then somebody hasn't shown up for 3 weeks. Well, that may be nothing, but it may be something. Let's reach out. So, you know, symptoms like that, but whatever it is, if something's not quite right and you notice it about your friend or you notice it about yourself, that's where we'd start. And then the next step would be go to realwarriors.net to learn more about it and then to see real stories like those, like Captain Ross and other people's. We have almost 100 video stories of real warriors describing their situation and how they got help and how their lives are better for it.
Captain Ross, there's still a stigma in many cases connected with this, and it's so sad because if somebody gets, pneumonia or measles or something like that, there's no stigma, but at least in some quarters there still is with psychological health concerns. You've not experienced that at all, though, in your wing, right?
So I have experienced that, but it was self-imposed. I had the stigma in my mind that I was weak and that I was struggling with it. It was something that I struggled with. Once I told other people, I've never experienced that as feedback from others. So I think that stigma is becoming more and more of an internal struggle of our own perception of our strength rather than the command. Everybody that I've talked to, the command has been incredibly supportive and wants to see us functioning and operating at our best so we can go do the mission, so we can be one team and work together for the common good.
One final question for you, Dr. Polizzi. Reach out early, and as Captain Ross said, often. Sometimes you need help for a considerable period of time with these problems, right?
Absolutely. It may be the case, and I think sometimes people think, well, you know, if I have a sore throat and I have strep throat, I'll take an antibiotic and boom, I'll be better. And that may be the case with some psychological health intervention, but it may not, and it may take a while. It may take a treatment protocol of talk therapy or something along those lines for a handful of weeks or maybe even a little longer, maybe less. It really depends on the situation. And Captain Ross makes a good point, though, which is sometimes it takes a little bit of work to figure out, oh, is this doc I'm working with, are we going to gel? Is this going to work for me? And if not, no harm, no foul. But then I would say go to realwarriors.net and figure out a way to get connected to perhaps a different resource that works for you. Because it, you know, what we'd hate to have happen is someone, you know, bust through their own stigma and make an appointment, and they work with a professional, and there's just some kind of personality conflict, and they say, well, that didn't work for me, and I'm never going back. You hate it when that happens, but it's possible, and so let's keep pursuing our care options. And, you know, you got to put up a little bit of a fight and advocate for yourself. But, yeah, it can be a quick fix, or it may take a little longer.
Captain, doctor, important stuff. Thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us talking about it here today. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about West End Tire and Service. They are proud to continue a tradition of excellence with the same great people that Siemens had for years and expanding on and adding new and improved services like shocks and struts, brake service, oil changes, front end alignments, tire rotation, tire repair, tire retreading service for heavy-duty trucks, and more. Trained technicians, if you stop in, they'll check your air for free, give you tire evaluations anytime. Stop by to see what's new. Visit them on Facebook, too, as well. West End Tire and Service, West Cunningham Street, next to Battery Warehouse Plus in Butler, 724-287-6973.
Tri-Rivers 2020. Focus on your musculoskeletal health.
I'm Dr. Robert Waltrip, a shoulder specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. New technology has revolutionized shoulder replacement surgery and allows precise placement of components to optimize patient outcomes. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, please visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Coming up, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, I'm Dave Milwaukee. We're going to be talking about hearing loss. Our guest visiting with us by telephone is audiologist Eric Brenda with Signia. Eric, nice to have you with us here for a few minutes today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
This is the time of the year that we focus, right, on hearing loss for a day?
Yes, we have a World Hearing Day on March 3rd.
That's next week now, matter of fact. Boy. Hard to believe we're that close to the month of March. That's good news. World Hearing Day. Who's this sponsored by, anyway?
So this is something driven by the World Health Organization, and it's a way to bring attention to the importance of early identification and intervention for hearing loss, because both are important. To be aware that you have a hearing loss, then what do you do once you've identified a hearing loss?
Is there any particular age group that is more susceptible these days to hearing loss?
You know, I always say that hearing loss doesn't discriminate. It can affect anyone, and we always associate it with older people as a part of the aging process. However, they're thinking about the types of earbuds that younger people are listening to and that we're often focusing loud sounds directly into the ear canal. We're taking one of the most preventable types of hearing loss, noise-induced hearing loss, and increasing the opportunity to have that hearing loss.
Well, earbuds are one thing. I've heard cars go past me when I'm walking along the sidewalk where the radio is turned up so loud that you can almost actually hear the bass pounding even with the windows closed. That's got to be dangerous for your hearing too, doesn't it? Earbuds or not?
Absolutely. The levels inside there, if you're hearing it on the outside, that is passed through a barrier and over the distance, it's far too loud on the inside.
Hmm. People who suffer from hearing loss tend to have higher levels of unemployment, too, right?
So, there can be a lot of factors because hearing loss starts to do so many different things. Because they have seen issues with employment and income related to it. You also see signs of social isolation. As people start to withdraw because communication gets difficult. And there's a lot of work coming out and a lot of upcoming investigations looking at the association between hearing loss and cognitive function. They've shown that some people with a larger degree of hearing loss higher correlation with diseases such as Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, wow.
And that intervention can actually help reduce some of that decline. Now, a lot of this is association, but it's showing these relationships.
Never heard that before. Possible connection to dementia later in life. Hmm? What other problems? There are some mental issues, depression, and other things that can be exacerbated by untreated hearing loss, right?
Absolutely, because if you think about hearing loss, this is our way of communicating with someone. Somebody talks to you, you hear what they're saying, you understand it, and you formulate your response based on what you've heard. Well, now if you've got a hearing loss in there, it's not that the volume is completely turned down on everything. You might hear sounds, but the clarity, the distinction's not there. So a word like cat and the word cap, they're going to sound very similar. Somebody might just hear almost like an ass sound. And without this context of the sentence, they may not know what someone's saying. Well, at first that's going to, start to seem like other people are mumbling. It's not your issue, it's other people. But then what happens is, you try to have conversations, and now you're working harder to fill in the blanks because you're missing pieces, and your brain's got to work and figure out what did somebody say. So you're slower in responding. It's a lot of extra work. Add some noise there if you're at a restaurant or a cocktail party type scenario where you've got other people conversing. Now there's just other sounds to cover up the harder sounds that you're trying to hear. It's a lot of work. So what do? You start to withdraw a little bit more. It's not working out. You'd rather stay home and turn on the TV where you can turn the volume up. And that sense of social isolation and it can lead to feelings of depression, and it's all that withdrawal. And it's easily remedied by trying to address the hearing loss and take that out of the equation.
And if you turn it up too loud, your spouse or partner, that might be the end of that partnership, right?
Exactly. I mean, now if you're home and you're sharing the TV and you've got one cranking the volume up, the other one can get annoyed. And so, again, you're creating disruption when you've got a hearing loss that can be addressed, and the first thing is being aware of that and doing something about it.
Are there any statistics or studies from, I don't know, Centers for Disease Control or someone like that that might indicate the incidence of hearing loss among Americans? Do we know a percentage or how many people might have compromised hearing?
Oh, there are, off the top of my head, the numbers aren't coming to me, and there are several studies kind of looking at that because it is so prevalent. I unfortunately do not have those numbers on the tip of my tongue right now.
The biggest problem, as I understand it, is that many people wait. Even if they realize they're beginning to suffer hearing loss, they wait to get tested and get treated.
That is absolutely true. We start to see people waiting up to around 8 years before they start to do something about it, which is very unfortunate because, I mean, you notice a hearing loss, and as I mentioned before, you start to think people are mumbling. People don't, with a hearing loss, don't often associate it as their issue. It's other people first. But then they start to realize that something's going on, and then it's making that step to go have your hearing tested and making that part of an annual health check to do that and find out where the hearing loss is. And then I think there's unfortunately a negative stigma about hearing aids, and hearing aids are the most common means of intervention, common ways of helping hearing loss when it's present. And it's the amount of technology, the improvements we made in the technology are so outstanding today. We're looking at, you know, excellent sound quality, able to reduce background noise. We have some studies showing people hearing aids better in background noise than people with normal hearing, because the technology is there to address this. And then style-wise, if I look at something like the Stiletto Connect hearing aid, here we've got a shape to the hearing aid that looks more like a common earbud rather than what we always picture a hearing aid to look like. So the technology, the design, the sound quality, everything is there to encourage people to wear hearing aids and address the hearing loss.
I can remember my grandfather had a hearing aid, and it was a rather large and bulky earpiece, and then a wire that led down to a unit that was about the size of a transistor radio that he had to carry in his breast pocket. That's old school, huh?
That is very old school. I mean, those were right for the time. Just if you think about some of the big transistor TVs that we had in the past, that's the technology that was then. What we have now, just like your TVs can be these nice flat screens with 4K Ultra HD, and the hearing aids have made that kind of progress, getting everything gets smaller and does more and just simply sounds better. The ways we can address the environment for the hearing aid wearer and keep it discreet, or if it's going to be seen, it's got a very nice look to it. So it's so different from what we've seen in the past.
Noise-induced hearing loss in years gone by was mostly seen in factory workers, in a foundry or somewhere like that, or a steel plant, or even in the military. Now, it could be anybody and any age. I do see, however, Eric Branda, that more and more people now are wearing ear protection when they're cutting the grass. And if you go back a few years, almost nobody wore ear protection. Now, almost everybody does.
No, you absolutely should, because if you look at exposure to noise, IOSH kind of recommends 85 dBA for an 8-hour workday. But we don't live just an 8-hour workday. So you start to think about things you're doing at home, such as being exposed to the lawn, that type of equipment. That's an extension of your day often. And you've got to protect it. That just means that if I'm exposed to loud sound longer during the day, I need to protect myself more and keep my exposure level reduced. So anytime you're in an environment where it's going to be considerably louder than conversational speech, and I use that kind of as a guideline. Conversational speech is a nice level right around 65 dB. As sounds get louder, then you've got to start to consider things. A vacuum cleaner is around 70 dB. So if you're in vacuum cleaner levels constantly, you might be exposing yourself throughout the day to sounds too loud. You need some breaks from that and to find ways to protect it. Wearing hearing protection is a really great way to prevent a very preventable hearing loss.
It's a silent epidemic, folks, and that's literally a silent epidemic and a public health problem. Some strategies for preventing and treating a hearing loss from audiologist Eric Branda. Thanks for being with us today, Eric. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment here about the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler. What a great job they do to help those who are less fortunate in many ways. They operate the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank, of course. They have their St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart and their Client Aid Program. And the Client Aid Program helps needy families or individuals, maybe with help on a heating bill or a rent payment at the end of the month, Client Aid. And that's funded through the operation of the thrift store. So you can help by donating items that you no longer need or want to the thrift store. It's very easy to do. Drop-off bins are right inside the door. You can use the container outside. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart. So think about it. Next time you're cleaning the closet or the upstairs, instead of throwing that stuff away, why not donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. Coming up on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR Listeners, I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Samuel Shim, who visits with us by telephone. He is a professor of humanities at NYU's School of Medicine, and he exposed the harsh realities of med-student life in his previous best-selling novel, The House of God, which reshaped how we teach young doctors. Now is a new issue that he's tackled in his latest book. First of all, Samuel Shim, nice to be with us. What's the title of your new book, sir?
It's called Man's Fourth Best Hospital, and that's supposed to be a little funny.
And what does it deal with? Your last one dealt with med student life.
Right. Well, this is different from the House of God, but the same characters, basically. The House of God was when I saw the injustice during my medical training at the Beth Israel Hospital in Boston. I said, hey, somebody's got to write about this, and I guess it's me. That's what really gets me going. You know, I write sort of in resistance. I'm a 60s guy, right? And it became, much to my surprise, this incredible, people call it the Bible, or, you know, because it was the first time anybody ever really addressed what we go through in our training. You know, most of the time it was the books that were written were, you know, with my heart pounding, I sewed in the valve, you know, glorious stuff. And this one was, I'm so tired, I wish this lady would just go away so I didn't have to treat her. Anyway, I wanted to do a sequel, but I was out of medicine. You know, I was doing lots of other things. I was writing all the way along, actually, lots of novels, plays, etc. And then out of the blue, 5 years ago, I got a call from NYU Medical School saying, hey, you want to be a professor of medicine at NYU? And I said, well, why? What do you want me to do? And they said, dummy, we want you to teach the House of God. And you have to understand, that it was such a radical book, The House of God, that my alma mater, and where I was on the faculty, Harvard Medical School, hated me. So all of a sudden, these guys loved me. And I went in, and I said, you know, I said, what do you want me to teach? Teach The House of God in a six-session seminar in a medical humanities program. And so I started to do that. And it was like I got really lucky, because I was all of a sudden, with fresh eyes, back into modern medicine, what medicine is like now. And I knew the miracles, of course, that we can do. But I had never before seen, the first time I went on the wards, were two things that really appalled me. One is money, and the other is computer screens, which means money and money, because what your audience may not know is the prime purpose of your doctor looking into that computer screen instead of facing you is that he's being forced by the system to get the most payment out of the insurance industry. These are billing machines. He doesn't want to be in front of them like that, or she, but he is. And so, boom, same as House of God, it was like I was hit with the muse, and I said, somebody's got to write about this, I guess it's me. And that's what the book's about. It's about doctors, nurses, everybody else going through this horrific job now that where they spend 60 to 70% of their time in front of computer screens instead of looking at you.
So much more time in front of screens than face-to-face with a patient?
Yeah, the figure is that they spend about an extra, several hours during the day just in front of the screen, not facing a patient, and then they have to take it home. As I heard from one of the guys at Bellevue Hospital in New York, he said, you know, I really used to leave thinking, oh, can I think of one good thing I did to take care of my patients today? And now, he says, I try to think of one good thing I do to take care of my computer today. It's ridiculous. They hate it. It's killing doctors. You've heard about this epidemic of doctor burnout. And the main cause is our being forced against our will to spend so much time in this ridiculous, you know, data entry job. I didn't get to be a doctor to enter data, and that's what it's all about. And this book goes right to the heart of that. Now, I lest your listeners think this is too somber or anything, I realized with The House of God and now with Man's Fourth Best Hospital, it's so awful that if anybody wanted to read it, it would have to ride on humor. So it's a satire. You know, you'll be laughing and then you'll be crying, stuff like that.
Can't patients benefit, though, from their doctors looking at their medical records online? I mean, their entire history could be there, or certainly their most recent history. Would that not be a benefit to patients?
Yes. The answer is yes. These things are very, very helpful with data. When Obama brought out the electronic medical record in 2008, it was a good idea. Data about the patient that can then be transported to other people who need to know, including the patients, right? The problem was that at that time, the private insurance industry reached in and attached to any diagnosis and treatment a monetary value. So they became, you know, so it was pay to play, right? And so the issue is not the screens, they're okay. The issue is the doctors go crazy being forced to bill the most for a particular procedure, and on the other side of the computer, the insurance person is trying to pay the least. There's a war over the screen, and you know, like all wars, it's about money. So, in the book, the solution by this great character called the Fat Man, wonderful hero of the book, says, we got to squeeze the money out of the machines. And you know who does that so well? The Veterans Administration. No money. It's all, you know, it's just data. It's just data.
We're talking...
So, yes, absolutely. The data is fine. It's just get the private insurance company, you know, huge corporations out of it. You know, and let me just say one other thing. Your doctor is usually now sitting with his back toward you, not even looking at you when he or she does the work. And one of the things that has been shown over and over and over again in medicine, the human connection between doctors and patients is very, very important to healing. And that's going down the and it's worse for doctors and worse for patients.
We need to take a quick break. I have a couple more minutes to chat with our guest, Samuel Shem, author of Man's Fourth Best Hospital, and we'll pick up our conversation with him in just a minute or so. Be right back.
February at Osterling's Lawn and Garden is filled with amazing gifts for your pets. If you didn't know, this month is Pet Dental Month, so grab some Frontline Oral Defense Chews, Petnology Oral Care Toothpaste, Primal Instinct Dental Bones, or even Sports Mix Grain-Free Dog Biscuits. Osterling's also has plenty of horse treats and snowman bird feeders. And remember, with spring just around the corner, vegetable seeds will be arriving very soon. They'll have everything you'll need at Osterling's Lawn and Garden.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Not all fish fries are created equal. St. Mary's Famous Fish Fry, celebrating their 64th year, is serving up some of the best baked or fried fish, scalloped potatoes, fries, green beans, Spanish rice, coleslaw, and dessert in the area. Every Friday during Lent, now through April 3rd, at the St. Mary of the Assumption School Cafeteria in Hermit. Dine in from 4 to 7 p.m., just $10 for adults, $5 for kids 4 to 11, free for kids 3 and under. Takeout begins at 2 p.m. and are $10 each. St. Mary's 64th Annual Famous Fish Fry, every Friday through April 3rd.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're chatting with Samuel Shem, currently a professor of medical humanities at NYU's School of Medicine, and the author, most recently, of a book entitled A Man's Fourth Best Hospital, a sequel to The House of God. Why did you choose, in particular, to use a fictional novel to tell this story as opposed to just a straight-out nonfiction expose?
That's a great question, Dave. I'm glad you asked it. Well, first of all, I think people are either born with a fiction brain or a nonfiction brain, and I have a fiction brain. You know, I just like going wild with what I can write. What I found after writing The House of God is that if you can tell a story, like in The House of God or Man's Fourth, with passion and humor and all of that, the way you change people is you hit them in the gut and the brain at the same time and in the heart, and that, in my mind, is worth, you know, all the nonfiction tomes that have written. Change can come from writing a novel. Look at Harriet Beecher Stowe. Lincoln said she's a little lady who started the Civil War, you know, or who dealt with the Civil War, I'm sorry. And I am convinced from The House of God that this, and from doctors all over the country now that have written to me, I'm convinced that this is hitting people right where they live And I think it's going to help change, and I'm dedicated to that. You know, as I said, I'm a 60s guy. We, in the 60s, we got together in connection, which is key, and we ended the Vietnam War, and we put the civil rights laws on the books.
Do you see any solution, either near-term or long-term, to the problem of screen time in medicine?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Read the book. I mean, the fat man in the middle of the book, he's the hero, gives a lecture on the six rackets of American healthcare, follow the money. And as I said earlier, there is a very simple solution in a way, which is to have a national, some kind of national healthcare system, can be like Medicare, can be like Obamacare, whatever, where there's no billing that goes through the screens. We will not be 80% of our time billing, we doctors. So that if there is also private insurance, right, then have the private insurance people, we send them the data and have them bill on their machines, not on our machines. If we just focus on giving good care, doctors would be happy, patients would be happier, everything would go more smoothly. So we got to get the money out of it. Get the insurance companies out of it.
Samuel Shem, if you're looking for him online, it's S-H-E-M, Shem. Did I hear you say earlier in our conversation that you've written some plays?
Yeah, I've written, I'm 75, I've written about just about everything, you name it. The most important and wonderful experience I ever had as a writer was with my wife, Janet Suri, to write a play called Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And this is the story of the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1935 in Akron. And it's, you know, this is one of the greatest health cures in the world, what they those two men discovered. And luckily, it's been off Broadway three times. It ran for a year, actually, off Broadway. And the principles that these two men discovered, which is that alcoholism was a disease and had to be treated in all three arenas, physical, psychological, and spiritual, not religious, spiritual. And guess what? That was the birth of the holistic movement in America in 1935. So that was, frankly, Dave, that was the greatest thrill I've ever had, is to sit in that theater in New York, and we used to give away like 40 tickets every performance to people who were in treatment who had no money. And, you know, just to see how everybody can be helped by that program.
Samuel Shem is our guest. Is there a website, Samuel, where people can find out more about you and your work?
Go to mansforthbesthospital.com. Mansforthbesthospital.com.
Nice to talk with you today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure. So long.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Ticket, mongoose is gone. ticky-ticky-ticky, mongoose is gone.
Won't be coming around for to kill you snake no more, my love.
Ricky-ticky-ticky, mongoose is gone.
Everybody who read the Jungle Book and know that Ricky-ticky-ticky is a mongoose who kills snakes. When I was a young man, I was led to believe there were organizations to kill my snakes for me. I.e. the church, i.e. the government, i.e. school. But when I got a little older, I learned how to kill it myself. I said,
Ricky-ticky-ticky, mongoose is gone. Ricky-ticky-ticky, mongoose is gone.
Won't be coming around for to kill you snake no more, my love.
Ricky-ticky-ticky, mongoose is gone.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba